From Paul H. Weaver, a journalist, the assistant managing editor of Fortune magazine. He received his degree in government with high honors from Cornell University and his PhD in political science from Harvard University. I think it's interesting he has quite a distinguished background, but what he's done in the last 2 years is probably of particular interest to us here. He has been part of the planning and the implementation for a thorough revamping of Fortune's magazine's departments. And since August 1981, he has been stationed in Washington to develop and launch a new Washington department. That sounds important, seeing as how it's coming through Fortune magazine. The first issue made its debut in 1983. Mr. Weaver also has a number of titles of a number of interesting articles, which I won't take time to read, but there is one segment of his vitae here which is, I think, pertinent to my introduction. He says he's done a number of lectures, and on this last line here, he says, I still like it, and I'm told that I'm good at it. This is Paul Weaver. He's good at it, he said.
There are always exceptions to every general statement that is true. Do conservative ideas necessarily have conservative consequences? And anyhow, what does it mean to say invisible ideas and the visible hand? Over the last few days, as I was taking a shower or shaving or staring out into space in between editing articles, I found my mind turning to these two questions, anticipating this afternoon's event. And as I puzzled over what I might say today and what the whole conference might turn out to deal with, I suddenly had the awful sinking feeling that I might be about to participate in an exercise in what I think of as PPEPR. Now, PPEPR is a phenomenon that occurs, has been occurring lately, when a political figure whom one cares about, a political movement of importance, seems to falter. And for the supporters of the idea or the figure, there is a need to interpret the experience of faltering, of suddenly making no further progress or even doing some about-face movement. And there, it seems to me, there are three sorts of ways the supporters of such a figure or such an idea can respond. And these are in order PN, PR, and PPEPR. PN is something I got to know about during a former half career of mine as a PR man at the Ford Motor Company in Dearborn, Michigan. PN consists of making no response, in other words, public non-relations. And it's something that many companies engage in whenever bad news strikes. Then ascending in the scale of respectable public discourse, we come to PR. Well, I don't think we've seen much PN out of Mr. Reagan's supporters. I think we're seeing quite a lot of PR these days, of a quite traditional sort. Show the man on the tube, associate him with looking good and sounding good, with nice people and nice events and nice causes, and hope his natural charm will overcome his supporters' sense of dismay. A third and more refined response to this, though, consists of PPEPR. PPEPR is a more or less modern invention. At least I've become aware of it only lately. One encounters it mainly in conferences and on op-ed pages of newspapers. It consists of small articles or small statements by the supporters of the political figure who suddenly find themselves forced to make like George Will. They repair to their libraries, they open up their Bartlett's Book of Quotations, or they go to the books that they read when they studied politics, philosophy, and economics at Oxford or Cambridge. And suddenly we find them talking about large and consoling philosophical and historical ideas, give an account for, a satisfying account for the disappointment one feels in the political progress of one's leader or one's idea. And so one suddenly in these articles encounters Reinhold Niebuhr on the ironies of history. One is reminded of Montaigne and the ultimate importance and pleasures and consolation of the contemplative life. One is treated to quotations from Adam Smith. You know, that wonderful line of his, absolutely silly, really, about whenever businessmen get together, they immediately start to conspire against the public interest, as if that excuses businessmen from not supporting the market system. Or we hear in the case of Ronald Reagan that it only is an apparent fact that he is being untrue to his conservative origins. Why, after all, the man was an actor. Those were also his origins. And a good actor isn't involved in the business of making phony appearances. Quite the contrary, a really good actor makes it his business to respond honestly to his audiences. And so what we're seeing in the case of someone like Ronald Reagan, not always being true to conservative constituents, is just Ronald Reagan, the actor, being true to his nature and his highest calling in his former profession, and responding genuinely to the felt needs and the responses and the psyche of other Americans in his audience as well. And one reads these pieces and one finds one's feeling of irritation and disgruntlement banished, and one feels serene in the presence of a larger philosophical truth that reconciles one to any momentary worldly displeasures. And it just occurred to me, do conservative ideas necessarily have conservative results? Well, as Ed Meese said, certainly not necessarily, not absolutely always. And having said that, perhaps one has reconciled oneself to one's disappointment a little bit. In other words, not to worry. Well, unfortunately, I think the disappointment that a great many of us feel these days is not something that can be excused by the clever ministrations of the experts in PPE PR. It is something that we have to worry about. It's something that I worry about. I think it's quite serious. And today I would like to explain just a little bit about why I think conservative ideas, which have advanced quite dramatically in the last 20 years in the history of the Philadelphia Society, why these conservative ideas have advanced while the liberal opposition has collapsed intellectually, while election results increasingly have shown these two intellectual trends, why all of these trends have produced a result that a great many people find unsatisfying. Now, one point I would like to make at the outset is that this disappointment does not simply reflect the fact that conservatives haven't triumphed in all spheres instantaneously. And that is absolutely true, but I don't think that gives any sensible and thoughtful person reason for pause. I don't think anyone is disappointed because there are bad programs yet to be undone. I don't feel anyone is disheartened by the fact that, as Mr. Meese pointed out at lunch, there's a lot of progress yet to be made. Indeed, there is. And if that were simply the situation, I don't think there would be any serious unhappiness. Politics, to a sensible person, is not a problem, it's a challenge. And for the last 20 years, conservatives have been doing very well in confronting this challenge by and large, witness the great progress of their ideas and their leaders. The problem and the disappointment is rather that, to a great many people, to me, conservative leaders in office seem astonishingly faint-hearted in their commitment to conservative ideas, and often seem to end up pursuing policy objectives that are in fact non-conservative or sometimes even anti-conservative. And here too, I don't mean that there are compromises that have to be made, especially in the large areas of international politics, of global diplomacy, of broad economic policy and economic management. One expects that, especially in the American political system. But there are vignettes, or there are moments or experiences that involve not the large issues, but the little ones, where the defection of conservative leaders is really hard to account for and seems gratuitous. I'll give one silly little example that faithful readers of Fortune magazine will be aware of. About a year ago, we did a story I'm very proud of. I think we ended up calling it something bland, like Ronald Reagan's Second Thoughts About Corporate Charity. But it was a story about a really fascinating and little reported and little understood episode in the history of the Reagan administration. And it has to do with the way in which the Reagan administration decided it would promote the cause of private. Insists in mediating among conflicting pressures on you, and which believes that ideas may be nice as a cover story, ideas may be, make nice PPE PR, but ideas don't really matter to the actual conduct of enterprises. Managerialism has grown in this country over the last 20 years about as vigorously as conservatism has, and I think it's the presence everywhere in our society, not least in Washington, not least in the White House, of the managerialist concept of management that accounts for a lot of the frustration and anguish among conservatives today. And it will not be until conservatives address the problem of finding non-managerialist ways of managing the political course of an application of conservative ideas that the malaise in the conservative community today, I think, will be alleviated. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Mr. Weaver. That was so constructive. It's given us a new direction, a direction for our thinking.